psionic energies discharged around the Uber Espers in coruscating lightning forks and crawled along the walls like bright actinic ivy. The Uber Espers' presence hammered on the air like a corpse at a wedding, like bad news in a maternity ward, like the cancer growth your doctor shows you on the scan. Five old and terrible monsters come to court at last to claim it for themselves. The gray train, blue hellfire, screaming silence, the spider harps, the shatter freak. Blue Hellfire was tall and slender and the most visibly human, wrapped in diaphanous silks over blue-white flesh beneath. Her short, spiky hair was packed with ice, and hoarfrost made world patterns on her corpse-pale face, her eyes and lips with a pale blue of hypothermia. She looked like someone who had been buried in the permafrost for centuries and only recently dug up. She smiled terribly on the king and emperor, sucking all the remaining heat out of the air around her. She stepped slowly forward, one pace at a time, inexorable as a glacier. She left burning footprints as she walked. The gray train no longer had a body as such. He only existed as an individual identity through an ongoing, concentrated effort of will. He manifested as a cloud of gray flakes that held a more or less human form, composed of dust and detritus gathered from his surroundings. He was only a memory of what he used to be, and if his concentration ever slipped, he wouldn't even be that. But there was still a power in him, fueled by his implacable will. Reality itself shivered where he walked, subject to his fleeting fancies. Wherever he was, the world was whatever he believed it was. Screaming Silence was a huge, unhealthily obese woman, vast beyond bearing, a good 8 feet tall and half as wide. Her shape was grotesquely distorted, all the normal human characteristics buried under huge rolls of fat. Her wide face was gaudy with colors, her mouth pushed out into an endless rosebud pout by the pressure of her huge cheeks. Her tightly stretched skin gleamed and glistened with sweat and urine and other fluids, and was flushed with a disturbing heat. Her gray hair flared out like a dandelion, and her eyes were big and round and always hungry. Her thick, stubby fingers constantly opened and closed, ready to grasp onto anything that came in reach. She wore nothing but lengths of steel chain wrapped around and around her, the steel links puncturing her flesh here and there to hold them in place. She stank of sweat and musk, and flowers left too long in the hothouse. The spider harps were two withered homunculi with open skulls. Their fruiting brains exploded out into a giant gray and pink web of exposed brain tissues that radiated away into nothingness. The two shriveled figures sat side by side on decaying chairs, their sunken faces dead and empty, apart from their eyes, still burning hotly with a vitality that would not diminish. Mummified in evil, preserved in hate. They held hands, the joined flesh fused together over many centuries. Two minds joined together for so long, they had become one. And finally, there was the Shatter Freak. His physical existence had been shattered and scattered across time and space by some ancient psychic trauma. His patchwork body was composed of different parts from different times, from past, present, and future, somehow combined in one constantly changing construct. The details of his torso, limbs, and extremities were never still for a moment, appearing and disappearing, growing and shrinking, slipping and sliding over and around each other, always being replaced by another. The Shatter Freak's face blurred and twisted as features dropped in and out, from child to ancient and everything in between, with only the eyes always the same, full of rage and pain, sorrow and horror.
Ugh, I was right. They haven't changed at all. Seriously ugly.
Not to worry, Finn. To me, you'll always be the greatest monster.
Why, thank you, Douglas.
The Uber Espers turned their full attention on the two men, and their presence filled the court, horrid and overpowering. They were monstrosities, abominations, things that should never have existed. Their cold, implacable will beat against Douglas and Finn's minds. It felt like dead fingers pressing at the shutters of their minds, trying to force their way in. But they were protected. The gray train looked furious.
I cannot reach them. I am prevented.
Then we'll just have to do it the old-fashioned way. tear them apart and eat their brains.
Screaming Silence's fat shook and jiggled as she spoke. Blue Hellfire looked at Finn and Douglas fiercely.
Yes, or perhaps I shall take them in my arms and love them and watch them burn with my cold blue flames. Watch their blackened faces slough off their disobedient heads.
The Spider-Harp's strands of brain matter pulsed with a fierce intensity.
Kill them. Kill the King and the Emperor, and we shall rule here.
No! Something is wrong. There's something else here.
Outside the Imperial Palace, Stuart Lennox fought up and down the long entrance steps to keep the howling thralls at bay. He'd started out with 20 men to back him up, but he didn't dare look to see how many he had left. The steps narrowed as they reached the top, and the entrance doors to the palace, which gave Stuart and his men the advantage of limiting how many thralls could come up at once. But the thralls just kept coming, clambering over the bodies of their own dead to get at the enemy. Stuart and his men held the steps through sheer ferocity and fighting skills, but already they were growing dangerously tired. Stuart's sword seemed to get heavier with every blow and parry, and a slow, insidious ache burned through his back and sword arm. He'd never been in a fight that lasted as long as this. Stuart was wearing his old Paragon uniform and body armor, and his purple cloak flapped proudly about him. Jas Sree had used his media contacts to track the uniform down and returned it to Stuart. In these days of mass shortages and hunger, pretty much everything was being put up for sale somewhere. Jas had cleaned and polished the uniform to within an inch of its life and presented it to Stuart just before they had to leave the rookery. Stuart had been touched, and he and Jas held each other for a long time, knowing it might be the last time they ever saw each other again. Eventually, they let go, and Jas helped buckle Stuart into the armor. While his men fell about him, Stuart stood his ground at the top of the entrance steps, swinging his sword with a fierce and dogged energy. He faced impossible odds with a smile upon his face, and for the first time in a long time, he felt like a Paragon again.
I'm fighting beside the Paragon Stuart Lennox, who's fighting like a man possessed. The steps of the Imperial Palace are littered with the bodies of thralls. Take that, you bloody bastards! Sorry, folks. But as you can see, it's a fight to the death here! Oh my!
Nina Malapert hovered behind him, sheltering in the open entrance doorway, popping out now and again to blast a whole clump of thralls into bloody pieces with her really big gun. Her news cameras were floating above the scene, broadcasting everything live to worlds across the Empire. She kept up a breathless running commentary, gun in one hand and sword in another, ready to rush out and guard Stuart's back when necessary. She wasn't much of a fighter as such, but like every other able-bodied person in the rookery, she'd been given basic weapons training, and she'd gone out with everyone else to fight, partly because she was damned if she'd miss such a great story, and partly because there was no place in the city now for observers. She had killed some thralls and was ready to kill some more, but for now she felt it was more important to see that her news site covered what was happening, so that win or lose, the other worlds would know that at least Logos went down fighting. Even Jas Sree, that slender and delicate media tech, had picked up a sword and gone out of the rookery to fight. He was as much a danger to himself as anyone else with a sword in his hand, but he went anyway because he was needed. Stuart had quietly arranged for Jas to be a part of one of the biggest armed groups, without telling him that, of course. But Stuart and Jas both knew that there was nowhere safe in the city anymore. The Psycho-Sluts hovered in the sky above the palace, holding rigid formation as their minds linked together. Their leader, Alessandra Duquesne, had brought them here against Diana Virtue's specific orders because much as they adored her, the Sluts had their own idea on how to stop the fighting once and for all. They were going to pool and combine their power and hit the Uber Espers below with everything they had, condensed into one unstoppable blow. The Uber Espers would lose contact with their thralls, might even be damaged or destroyed, and the invasion would be over. The young ladies of the Psycho Sluts had discussed this plan in earnest and at some length. They knew some or all of them might die during the attack or after, but they had sworn a vow to be worthy of their idol, Jenny Psycho. And this seemed just the sort of thing she would have done. So they put their minds together, raised and harnessed their power till it crackled on the air around them, and then struck down at the Uber Espers in the palace. The attack went wrong almost immediately. Contact with the minds of the Uber Espers blew their gestalt apart in a moment. The young Espers just weren't prepared for the sheer otherness of the Uber Espers, and they had no idea how powerful these five monsters had become down the centuries. The Psycho Slut's attack fragmented, the metal shards thrown back in their faces. A single whiplash of power smashed through the Psycho Slut's defenses, ripping through their minds like barbed wire. Some went mad, pinwheeling away through the sky. Some exploded into flames, burning inside and out, and fell to the ground like thrashing, kicking comets. Three just exploded into bloody gobbets, and that left just the two most powerful minds in the Psycho Sluts, Alessandra Duquesne and her oldest and dearest friend, Joanna Maltravers. Alessandra fought off the mental attack, retreating deep into her mind and concentrating all her power into defensive shields. Her body convulsed with pain and outrage, but her mind held firm. When she finally felt the assault was over, she came out to look at the world again and found that Joanna's defenses had failed. Someone else looked out from behind her eyes. Her face twitched and twisted as some small part of her fought the possessing mind, but she had already lost. Joanna smiled someone else's smile and threw herself at Alessandra. They darted back and forth in the skies over the palace, swooping and diving and whirling around each other in cascades of pyrotechnic energies. They lashed out with physical and mental attacks, and psionic explosions ripped the air apart. Both Alessandra and Joanna took terrible injuries, and their blood rained down on the battle below. They threw rocks and stones and even corpses at each other, and lightning bolts stabbed down from the cloudless sky. Sleeting energies discharged around them as they fought to get inside each other's heads. And in the end, possibly because the possessing mind was distracted by what was happening in the court, Alessandra forced her way past Joanna's shields, and with a remorseless psychokinetic hand, crushed the madly beating heart in her old friend's breast. Joanna fell limply from the sky. Alessandra dropped after her and caught Joanna's body before it hit the ground. She held her dear friend in her arms, rocking her back and forth like a sleeping child. And then the last of the Psycho Sluts put her dead friend aside and went walking through the city streets, blowing thralls apart with the force of her gaze, while tears rolled jerkily down her bloodstained cheeks. Thralls were everywhere in the city now, filling the streets and squares. Baying mobs attacked the city's defenders on every front, crowding in from every direction, and still more came flooding across the city's boundaries. Only their lack of weapons and tactics gave the defenders any chance at all, and every now and again, one section of the Thrall army would break off fighting to attack another section, when one Uber Esper thought another was doing too well and carving out too much territory for themselves. They did not trust each other, and never would, even in this last battle for the heart and soul of Logris. With millions of Thralls under their command, the Uber Espers now enjoyed whole new levels of power. Some of their Thralls were manifesting Esper abilities on the Uber Espers' behalf. Some projected terrible emotions, so that defenders cried out and howled and crawled with disgust and did not know why. Some generated psychokinetic storms that sent razor-sharp objects hurtling through the streets ahead of them. Others sent telepathic illusions against the defenders, visions of rampaging aliens or monsters, or loved ones dying in horrible agonies. Buildings seemed to come alive, while awful things fell from a splintering sky. Sometimes these new Espers even managed to turn one set of defenders against another. But none of these proxy Espers lasted long. They burned out quickly from the pressure, often literally. But there were always more to replace those who fell. The defenders were forced back by sheer weight of numbers. They fought every inch of the way, and Thralls fell dead and dying in their thousands, and hundreds of thousands, but it was not enough. Slowly, inexorably, the defenders were forced back toward the center and heart of the city, the Imperial Palace. And that was when Lewis Deathstalker arrived with the cavalry. The fleet came howling out of hyperspace and slammed into orbit around the beleaguered world of Logris. Thousands of pinnaces and gravity barges and war machines spilled out of the star cruisers and descended onto the Parade of the Endless, followed by all kinds of ships from Mistworld and Viramon. The morning darkened as they filled the sky, and the defenders below fought on with renewed strength. The pinnaces and ships made landings all over the city, launching whole new armies of fighting men, already angered by what they'd seen on Nina's news sites. Gravity barges hovered over the thralls crowding into the city and blew them apart with disruptor cannon. War machines moved to block all the entrances to the city so that no more thralls could get in. And falling out of the sky like avenging angels, flying under their own power and surrounded by halos of unearthly energies, came Louis Deathstalker and Jessamine Flowers, Brett Random, and Rose Constantine. Home again to clean house. Louis swooped down to the entrance steps of the Imperial Palace. He hit the bottom of the steps so hard, the stone cracked and shattered under his feet, and the thralls fell back like frightened children. Jessamine dropped lightly down beside him, and they both lashed out with their maze-altered minds. Hundreds of surrounding thralls hit the ground and did not move again. The Uber-Espers blasted right out of their minds. And all around, thousands of thralls filled with hate charged forward. Louis stood his ground and met them dispassionately with gun and sword, his long steel blade flashing back and forth faster than the human eye could follow. His sword cut in and out of thrall flesh in under a second, and they fell dead and dying before him. Jessamine was there at his side, watching his blind spots, her sword rising and falling just as quickly. None of the thralls got close enough to touch them.
You should have been in opera, Louis. You really know how to make an entrance.
Never cared much for opera. Too many good guys end up dying in the last act.
They allowed the press of bodies to follow them up the stone steps to the top, where Stuart Lennox stood alone, his uniform torn and bloody, but his sword still swinging. Nina Malapert dodged out from behind him now and again to blow large holes in the crowd with her gun. She saw who was coming up the steps. Nina gestured, and her cameras came flying in from all directions to get a good angle. Stuart just nodded to Louis and Jessamine.
Good to have you back, Deathstalker! Make yourself at home! Kill a whole bunch of thralls!
Thanks. Don't mind if I do.
Behind them, Nina Malapert shook her head sadly when she realized that was all they were going to say. It was hardly dialogue for the ages. And all across the city, ships and pinnaces landed wherever they could, and soldiers and fighting men and women disembarked with sword and gun at the ready. They charged right into the waiting thralls, and soon there were surging mobs of combatants in every street and square. Men and women from Mistworld and Viramon cut and hacked their way through the crowded boulevards, eager for blood and vengeance. They had come for Finn Durandal, but for the moment they'd settle for taking out some of their grievances on the thralls. There was no peace to be found anywhere in the Parade of the Endless, as the two sides contested for every square foot of the city. Famous buildings burned, and towers and bridges that were works of art collapsed in ruins. Disruptor blasts scorched away precious mosaics and set fires blazing in protected parks. Both sides in the battle were too busy to notice or care.
Look! It's the dragons! Owen has sent his dragons to aid us!
The Ashrai came flying down, their huge, grotesque forms soaring over the city on wide, membranous rainbow wings. Somewhere among the vast army of the Ashrai, the old traitor called Carrion had to relish the irony. John Silence was in the city too. He'd come down in a pinnace alongside his troops. The fleet captains had done everything they could to talk him out of it, but he didn't listen. They'd wanted him to stay safe with the Star Cruisers, deciding strategy and giving orders, but he knew his place was on the ground. He'd always known he was an admiral in name only, and now he needed to be back in his old city that he had defended and saved so many times before, over so many years. It was time again to do what he did best, fight the good fight against impossible odds. so he left Captains Price and Vardalos in charge of the fleet and rode a pinnace down to the Parade of the Endless as just another trooper. Some of the men recognized him, and some didn't, and it didn't matter to him either way. He was first out of the pinnace and led the charge against the waiting thralls. He swung his sword with both hands, killing the enemy with swift and subtle strokes, always pressing forward, forward. He'd never been able to work actual miracles like Owen and the others, but after all these long years, there were few indeed who could match his prowess with a sword. He'd never thought of himself as a hero or a legend or even as a warrior, just a good soldier determined to do his duty no matter what. His sword slammed in and out of bodies, never pausing for a moment. It felt like old times again. Investigator Frost was right there at his side, where she belonged. Captains Price and Vardalos conferred urgently, and then ordered the fleet star cruisers to descend into the lowest possible orbit, actually inside the planet's upper atmosphere. With the ship's AIs not working, the crews had to prepare the targeting computers themselves, and then used the ship's disruptor cannon to scorch whole areas around the city's boundaries. The huge armies of the possessed disappeared in moments, reduced to glowing dust by the power of the ship's guns. There would be no reinforcements for the thralls in the city. There were just so many of them, and more on the way. The ships kept targeting and firing. It was a dangerous procedure for the star cruisers. Pinpoint accuracy required flying low, well inside the atmosphere. Star cruisers weren't designed or built to do that. It was only a matter of time before they started breaking up. The ships kept firing anyway, because they were needed. The Uber-Espers struck back, turning their power on the low-flying star cruisers, hexing their tech and attacking their crews. Systems failed, and computers crashed on ships throughout the fleet. Firestorms raged out of control through narrow steel corridors, and airlocks opened spontaneously, venting atmosphere and pressure. Some crew went insane just from the Uber-Esper contact and attacked each other. Maddened, though not possessed, they ran wild, and struggling figures wrestled for control of ship's departments, fighting each other blindly in every compartment and bay. Ship captains had to release security sleep gas into affected areas to restore control. They set up internal force shields to contain the worst damage, and reluctantly retired to higher orbits, where hopefully the Uber-Espers couldn't reach them. They had done all they could, but it was up to the ground forces now. On one ship, the ironically named Herald, the whole crew went crazy. Everyone, from the lowest crewman to the captain, Len Lyle, ran mad in the Star Cruiser. Sounds like damned souls in hell issued from their comm channels, and no one was surprised when the Herald opened fire on the ships around her. Disruptor cannon blasted away at the shields on already weakened ships. A dozen support ships from Mistworld and Hieromont were swept away in moments. The Herald lashed viciously about her in her madness, threatening every other ship in the fleet. And only Captain Alfred Price was able to do anything about it.
This is the captain. All remaining hands abandon ship. Repeat, all hands abandon ship.
His ship, the Havoc, had taken the brunt of the Herald's attack and was already crippled. Her shields were failing, her hull was holed in several places, and Price no longer had control over his guns. Once the survivors had obeyed the order to abandon ship, Price still sat in his command chair on the deserted, burned-out bridge, surrounded by the smoldering remains of gutted consoles and the bodies of his fallen officers. He had to keep wiping away blood that trickled down into his eyes from the great wound on the side of his head, and it felt like one of his arms was broken. The Herald had done a hell of a job on his ship. Price lurched up out of his command chair. He dropped into the navigator seat. He called up all the power left in the engines and aimed his ship right at the Herald. For once, his duty was clear, and he felt like a real captain at last. He just wished there'd been somebody left to see it. He watched the mad ship draw slowly closer on the bridge view screen, not even bothering to get out of his way. Captain Vardalos took sole command and regrouped what was left of the fleet in high orbit. She wished she'd had ship's espers like in the old days. The Uber-Esper attack seemed to have stopped for the moment, but she had no way of knowing whether it might start again. No one really knew anything where the Uber-Espers were concerned. Louis Deathstalker and Jessamine Flowers fought side by side at the top of the stairs at the entrance to the palace, performing dark wonders with sword and gun. No one had seen such warriors since Owen's time. None of the thralls could touch them, despite the huge numbers. Stuart Lennox was there too, tired but dogged. Grateful as he was for Louis and Jessamine's presence, he was beginning to find their unending skill and fury just a little spooky. Louis's sword rose and fell, cut and hacked, throwing thrall bodies aside as though they were nothing. Jessamine spun and danced, as fast and deadly as a striking snake, and more beautiful. Death had never looked more glamorous or more certain. The dead piled up on every side, forming tall barricades so that the thralls could come up the steps only in narrow files to attack their enemy. They came clambering carelessly over the dead on the steps, their possessed eyes blazing with unquenched fury. They fought with clawed hands, like animals. Nina still opened fire with her very big gun on occasion, when the mob seemed to be pressing especially close, but the energy crystal was running low. She didn't have many shots left. She'd given up on her running commentary, the scenes the floating cameras were broadcasting live said it all. But one question still nagged at her, and in the end, she just leaned forward.
Where's Owen? Is the blessed Owen come to save us?
No. Owen's busy elsewhere. We'll just have to settle for me.
The thralls came surging forward, a solid wave of rage and hatred driving up the steps, desperate to get their hands on Louis and Jessamine and drag them down. Nina aimed her big gun at the mass. The blast didn't even slow them. Louis and Jessamine and Stuart held their position at the top of the steps, and the thrall wave shattered against them, like the sea against an immovable rock. After everything they'd been through, after all the dangers Louis and Jessamine had faced, the thralls might be hard work, but they weren't scary. And Stuart Lennox, his old pride returned, was once again the chosen paragon of Viramon. And he stood proudly beside his hero Louis, as unmovable as any male survivor. The pressure of the attack actually lessened as the Uber-Espers realized it would take more than force of numbers to bring these three down. And so they pushed their abilities to the limit, and suddenly some of the attacking thralls began to manifest Esper abilities. The thralls only lasted a few minutes before burning up inside and out, consumed by the very power they were wielding. But they threw fire and rubble at the defenders and rocked them with psychic assaults. And yet, somehow the attacks never seemed to focus or find their targets, as though even the Uber-Espers couldn't quite comprehend what Louis and Jessamine had become. Stuart just kept his head down, and the psychic assaults collapsed almost as quickly as they'd begun. More soldiers came pouring in from the side streets, with warriors from Mistworld and Viramon. They saw the three standing firm at the entrance to the palace, and the dead piled up before and around them, and the newcomers raised their battle cry. The new fighters and the thralls crashed together at the foot of the steps, and the square before the palace was quickly full of struggling figures. It was chaos, with people striking out blindly in all directions. And Jessamine Flowers lowered her sword and raised her voice. She drowned out every other sound, rising and rising, until it seemed everyone in the city could hear it. And it seemed like everyone in the city stopped to hear it. Defenders and thralls alike were held where they stood. And then the Ashrai joined in, adding their voices to hers, until the air itself shook with the power of the song. And one by one, and then dozens by dozens, the thralls began to collapse. They fell limply to the ground and did not rise again. In all the streets and squares and crowded bloody places around the Imperial Palace. The song of Jessamine and the Ashrai and the people who had come to save a city and a world had a strength and a force and a power that not even the Uber-Espers could match. Their minds were forced out of those they possessed, and the grounds around the palace were carpeted with the living, empty shells of what had once been men and women. But Jessamine couldn't sing forever, and eventually even her voice gave out. Without her to lead them, the Ashrai fell out of the song. And so everywhere else in the city, the fighting went on, perhaps a little more savagely than before. Brett Random's first instinct had been to bolt for the safety of the rookery the moment his pinnace landed, and go to ground there until all the fighting was safely over. He knew all kinds of hiding places in the rookery, where even his oldest friends and enemies wouldn't have been able to find him.
Oh, shit!
But the sheer number of thralls he faced almost immediately made it clear running out was not a viable option. He wouldn't get 10 paces on his own.
Oh, bloody hell!
Brett drew his weapons. Rose Constantine had drawn her weapons even before they'd landed properly. She saw the army of thralls laid out before her, thirsting for her blood, and smiled widely. She hefted her sword once and went to meet them like a lover. Brett and Rose soon ended up fighting back to back, separated from the rest of the fighters they'd come down with. Rose didn't hold back for anyone as she cut a bloody path through the enemy, and Brett was terrified to be separated from her. The tides of battle moved them well away from the Imperial Palace. Brett was forced to call up all the fighting skills he'd learned from Rose just to survive, and for a while the two of them fought well and finely, cutting down every thrall that came within reach. They were both faster and stronger than any human had a right to be, and none of the thralls could match them for a moment. But Brett could still see other soldiers dying, pulled down and torn apart by the thralls, and his borrowed courage and skills were no match for the growing certainty that even with the Wild Rose at his side, eventually the thralls would get him too. There were just too many of them. He couldn't run, and he knew his fighting skills weren't enough on their own, so reluctantly, he did the one thing that scared him the most. He deliberately reopened the old mental link between him and Rose and used his Esper compulsion to slam their minds together so that he could share in all the wild madness that made Rose the unbeatable fighter she was. Their minds opened up and meshed together, all the parts fitting into place into one larger structure. Rose delighted at the feel of his mind in hers, and hers in his. They both knew everything about each other, all their skills and secrets. The whole process was finished in a second, and suddenly the thralls were faced with a new threat. 2 superhuman fighters who fought as one, equally skilled, equally savage. Brett and Rose struck about them with inhuman speed and skill, performing dark wonders of swordsmanship, piling up the bodies around them, so that the thralls had to climb over the fallen to get at their enemies. The Uber Espers looked on Brett and Rose through their proxy eyes, and then had to look away, because the two burned so very brightly and fiercely. The Uber Espers called thralls away from other lesser threats, and commanded them to bring down Brett and Rose at any cost. Brett and Rose fought on with their bodies, but their minds were elsewhere. The process they had started was still continuing. Their minds opened up and up, meshing together on every level, merging into one incredible mind. A single mind, male and female, one personality operating in 2 bodies simultaneously. What the Uber Espers imposed, Brett and Rose learned to do voluntarily. The process that Finn's Esper drug had begun and the madness maze had continued now reached its fruition in a single mind that was far more than the sum of its parts. It was a fusion, the best of both minds and the worst. All the knowledge and experience and memories of 2 people now combined into 1. It was a new thing, and Brett Rose woke up smiling. Their combined will hit the thralls like a hammer blow, hurling them away, dead and broken. Brett Rose looked about them. More thralls blew away under the pressure of their gaze, opening up a wide space around the 2 bodies with a single mind. The Uber Espers lashed out with a telepathic attack focused through their thralls, but it glanced harmlessly away from the new creature's shields. The Uber-Espers recoiled from this new thing and retreated, shocked and horrified by stirrings of a long-buried memory. The thralls turned and ran, leaving Brett Rose standing alone in an empty square, surrounded by the dead. They lowered their swords, their many wounds slowly but steadily healing themselves. Nikki 16, that proud and feisty human-alien hybrid from the Rookery, ran through the square at that moment with a dozen of her fellow fighters, heading for the palace, drawn by what they'd heard in Jessamine's song. She stopped as she recognized Brett and Rose, and flashed Brett a smile.
Hey, Brett!
She hesitated. Brett was different. She could feel it. There was more to him. Brett and Rose looked at Nikki at the same moment, in the same way. And Nikki backed away from them. She was frightened, and she didn't know why. She ran after her companions out of the square, not even sure what it was she was running from. Except that it felt like Brett was dead. Or at least, gone. Gil Lakotai led his Mistworld warriors through the streets, using sharp and cunning tactics to split the Thrall armies apart into more manageable groups. Mistworlders knew all about strategy and dirty fighting. Gil swung his long curved blade with wide, easy strokes, husbanding his energy, always leading from the front. More and more people came to join him as news of his success spread, and soon he was leading an army of his own through the Parade of the Endless. His skill and courage were unmatched, and he built his own legend that day, through feats of valor and derring do that were all the more impressive because they came from a simple man, untouched by the dubious blessings of the Madness Maze. Gil Lakotai led them unstoppably toward the heart of the city. News cameras came rushing in from all directions to broadcast it all live. People on worlds all across the Empire followed his exploits because he was one of them, not a legend or a monster from the maze, just a man with a man's courage and determination. Gil Lakotai led his people on, cutting a bloody path through the chaos toward the Imperial Palace. John Silence, the last survivor of those who'd come down in his pinnace, made contact with the clone guards and took control of them. They weren't much use without officers to guide them, but they recognized Silence's natural authority and gratefully accepted his tactics and orders. Silence recognized them as clones, but had no idea of their origin. They still wore their steel masks, but they were a fighting force and just what Silence needed, so he didn't question them too deeply. He just set them to work, killing thralls and pulling together, and then he led them into battle, fighting solidly and well. The maze might not have granted him miraculous powers like Owen and the others, but he was still the greatest fighting soldier of his time. He'd even gone head-to-head with Owen Deathstalker and held his own. The thralls were no match for him. He looked into their possessed eyes and was reminded of his battles long ago against Shub's Ghost Warriors. The Ghost Warriors were a very long time ago, but he didn't feel old. In fact, it seemed to him that he'd never fought better than this. Silence and his clone guards reached the palace steps not long after Jessamine's marvelous song, and he led them carefully through the fallen thralls' bodies to the foot of the steps. Nina spotted him. She came bounding down the steps for a quick interview with this new leader of the guards. Lewis and Jessamine had already refused an interview, and Stuart never had much to say. But she stopped suddenly, distracted by one of the guards. The steel mask had been torn away during a struggle, and for the first time, Nina could see one of the guards' faces. And for all the distortion, she recognized it immediately as Finn's. She turned quickly and ripped the mask off another guard.
Clones! Finn's clones, all of them! Oh, another exclusive!
And she did her happy dance, right there in front of a bemused Silence. And then she went bounding back up the steps to spill the news to Stuart. She forgot all about interviewing the solemn-looking man who'd led the guards into the square. She had a feeling she ought to know him, but that could wait. She glanced back for a moment. Besides, he did seem awfully busy chatting with someone who wasn't there. Elsewhere in the city, the aliens from the Rookery had joined the fight against the invading thralls. They emerged from unexpected places to rend and kill unsuspecting thralls and enjoyed themselves immensely. Led by the silver-armored Touchcraw, they came boiling out of sewer openings and factory outlets, and erupted from boarded-up factories and pollution dumps, catching the Thralls by surprise. The aliens tore the possessed humans apart. They didn't know the bodies were mind wiped, and they didn't care. They had grievances to address, and besides, they were hungry. Sometimes they had to be restrained from attacking the clone guards and the fleet's soldiers. The Rookery people cheered the aliens on, which was something of a new sensation for the aliens. The monsters from Chandrakor quickly gravitated towards the aliens and fought by their side. They felt more at home here, though they politely declined when asked if they'd like to join the feasting. The monsters excelled at fighting the Thralls, partly because of their bestial natures, honed by long years of struggle for survival on Chandrakor, but mostly because they had nothing left to lose. They had been promised that they could come home, and here they were. It might be called Logris now, rather than Golgotha, but this was still the Parade of the Endless, just as they remembered. Even if it had been fancied up a bit since their time, they were home again. And if they had only come back to fight and die, that was fine by them. Michel Dubois, one of the few surviving members of Parliament, fought with his back to a wall in a side alley already choked with bodies. Most of the Viramond warriors he'd come down with were already dead, but he and a dozen others fought on, stubbornly refusing to be dragged down and torn apart like the others. Dubois swung his sword with more defiance than skill. He had always been fiercely loyal to his homeworld, if not always to its most famous paragon, Louis, but with the slaughter of Clan Deathstalker by Finn's creatures, all the people of Viramond had sworn to become Deathstalkers in their place, and Dubois was no different. He had been among the first to volunteer to come and fight on Logris, even though he was far more a politician than a warrior. He thought he'd done well enough, considering. He'd killed Thralls. His only regret is that he should have to die in such a squalid back alley, so far away from the House of Parliament and the Imperial Palace, where he'd spent so much of his life. He'd wanted to see them once again, at least, before he died. One by one, the men and women around him were dragged down and killed. Each and every one of them went down fighting to the last. They fought impossible odds, as a Deathstalker should, and not one of them broke and ran. So Michel Dubois didn't die there. And when he finally fell, still flailing about him with his sword, his last thought was,
"Ah, Louis, I always knew you'd be the death of me."
The whole city was a battleground now. The Thrall invasion had been halted by the Star Cruiser's actions outside the city, but the armies of Thralls already inside the city were still surging through the streets of the Parade of the Endless. The tides of battle swept this way and that. And apart from one small area around the Imperial Palace, no one could tell for sure which way the war was going. Inside the court, the five assembled Uber-Espers launched the full force of their considerable will against the waiting Douglas Campbell and Finn Durandal. And once again, they failed. They simply could not reach the two men standing steadily before them. The Uber-Espers looked at each other, baffled. No S-blocker ever made could have stood up to such an attack. The Uber-Espers' heads snapped around. All the Uber-Espers knew that laugh. And as they looked wildly about them, Diana Virtue stepped casually out from behind Finn's throne to fix them all with her savage glare.
"I've been here all along, hidden behind the strongest shields I ever created. I walked in here with Douglas and Tell, and nobody saw or heard me. Even they couldn't be sure I was with them. They just had to take it on trust. You see, Douglas and Finn were the bait, but I am the trap. I knew you'd never face me willingly, even if you did manage to kill me once. So Douglas and I came up with a plan to bring all of you to me. And guess what? I brought a few friends along."
She rose up into the air, hovering above the throne on unseen wings, and suddenly she was shining brightly as the sun. Her presence joined with the presence of many other minds to beat on the air of the court. Diana Virtue became a conduit for all the power of the mass mind of the Oversoul.
The Oversoul has come back! The City of New Hope traveled here with the fleet from Mistworld, unseen and unsuspected. only I knew! A secret weapon to be preserved and kept ready for just this moment! You Uber-Espers are all that's left of a particularly shameful episode of our past, and we will finally be rid of you!
The terrible destructive force feed upon the monstrous minds of the Uber-Espers, driving them together to support their mental shield. The Oversoul kept up the pressure, beating at the Uber-Esper's shield with brutal strength, determined to wipe out the menace of the Mad Minds once and for all. Diana Virtue grinned like a death's head as the attack focused through her enlarged mind. This was what she had come back for, an old vengeance for an old crime. The Uber-Espers huddled together as their mental shield shuddered and cracked, failing under the onslaught of the Oversoul and Diana Virtue. And then, something utterly unexpected happened. The dusty gray figure of the gray train collapsed, losing its human shape to become a gray cloud that swept over Blue Hellfire, surrounded and sank into her, darkening the color of her corpse pale skin. Icy flames leapt up around her. No! The Shadow Freak lurched forward, almost against his will, his body parts appearing and disappearing at dizzying speed, until he too fell into Blue Hellfire, like a rock into a pool, absorbed and swallowed up in a moment. Screaming Silence lunged forward, and her great fleshy body wrapped itself around Blue Hellfire. The flames blazed brightly, radiating an impossible cold as the two figures melted together to become one. A dark silhouette of a human figure, like a hole in the world. And finally, the two withered homunculi of the spider hearts snapped out of existence like a hot soap bubble. Only one figure now remained, bathed in icy flames, like a clay shape being recast in a kiln. And when it was all over, and the cold fires had died away, there stood just a single figure. A short, blonde woman who shone like the sun. Diana looked at her blankly.
Who the hell are you? Where did the Uber-Espers go?
Back inside me where they belong.
The woman rolled her head around and flexed her shoulders, as though it had been a long time since she'd been in a body.
Oh. I should thank you, Diana Virtue, and the Oversoul. The pressure of your attack brought about what I've been unable to achieve for hundreds of years. You put me back together again.
The Uber-Espers, all of them, they were just parts of you?
Ah, I went through the madness phase a long, long time ago, and it split me apart into 5 separate sub-personalities because that was the only way I could cope with what I found there. Greetings to you, King Douglas and Emperor Finn. I am Alicia Vomach Deathstalker. I am finally back, and all the worlds that are shall tremble before me.
Oh, this is not good.
You think?
The sheer force of Alicia's presence seemed to fill the court, pressing against the far walls and shuddering in the floor. It pushed Diana's presence aside effortlessly, and both Douglas and Finn had to fight an urge to kneel and bow their heads. They felt as though they didn't belong in the court, like vermin in the gaze of a living goddess. The Oversoul was silent in Diana's head, struck dumb by this turn of events. Even their best precogs hadn't sensed this coming. The entire mass mind of the Oversoul looked upon the restored, incandescent mind of Alicia Vomach Deathstalker and was afraid. She smiled slowly upon Diana.
We have met before. When you manifested the Mater Mundi all those years ago, that was part of me. I was spread far and wide by the maze, torn apart into grotesque subpersonalities, crude representatives of my various needs and functions. But I always had an agenda.
Who were you? How did you become the Uber-Espers?
What? You mean the Oversoul never told you about the mad old aunt they kept in the attic? I am the beginning of the Esper movement. They all have their root in me. I was one of the group of scientists who first discovered the Madness Maze in a cavern deep inside Haven, centuries and centuries ago. I was an Esper, one of the very first. I found others, bound them to my will, and forced them to go through the maze with me. My intention was to produce a mighty Esper Gestalt with me in total control. But the maze wasn't what I thought it was. It tried to change me, remake me. I couldn't have that. I fought it. The effort broke me. Tore me apart into the Uber Espers and the driving force and the mass unconscious of the other Espers. Became the Esper Underground. Later, they called me the Mater Mundi, Mother of All Souls. Even scattered and separated, I was a force in the history of mankind. Now, I'm back and steeped in my true power again. Yes. I like this new mask Gestalt you call the Oversoul. So brightly shining, so very tasty. Why... I could just eat it all up.